This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This will be a lot of fun as we get ready to talk a little baseball with the commish. Not going to call him Bud. Not going to call him Mr. We're going to call him the commish. We're going to call him commish. And I told Tiki how much money he made his last couple of years. Tiki was stunned. That's why he's got a nice jacket. He's dressed well. I'm sure he's got about a $50,000 watch. He's doing okay. No. Hey, no.
I got an old watch that I've worn for years. That's a long way from 50 grand.
Welcome to our show. How you doing, Commissioner? Okay?
Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you. We chatted nicely off the air as well. So it's good to see you. Look good. And, I mean, there's a million places to start. I would say for those who maybe were a little bit newer to the game and maybe not as intimately familiar with some of your accomplishments, the wild cards, the three divisional format expansion, the creation of Jackie Robinson Day, did a lot of great things. How would you rate? I was doing a lot of research this morning, all the commissioners. It's a tough question to answer, but I think you'll give it to us honestly. How do you rank your commissionership? Where would you place yourself amongst your commissioner peers?
Well, I try not to do that, all kidding aside. I always have said, since I'm a history buff and a historian now as a professor, but I'm going to let other people do that. All I can tell you is that for the 22-plus years that I was a commissioner, it was the most active 22 years in baseball history in getting things done, whether it was the wild card, whether it was interleague play, whether it was revenue sharing, whether it was a complete and all the other things that went on. So I guess what I say to you, and I'm not being facetious when I say it to you, I'll have to let all of you make that judgment.
Well, let me just follow up because interesting answer. Was it as active as it was because you are incredibly proactive or because baseball was in a little disrepair when you took over? Or maybe both?
Both. Both, you know, just like American presidents sometimes are, you know, it depends on what happens and what period that they live in. In 92, when I took over, there was chaos everywhere. In fact, in the book, we had a big debate, Phil Rogers and I. And there was one line it said, and I use this line a lot, so I'll cover it up a little, but you know what I'm talking about. I said, I inherited a blankety mess. And he left it in there, and because that's what it was. And so, but one thing about change and sports, and you both will understand it, so change comes slowly and sometimes with great difficulty. We had a labor problem and lost a World Series in 1994. It was our eighth work stoppage. Think about that.
Wow.
Eighth work stoppage since 1970, since my first year in baseball. And I remember the first thing I did was in September of 1993, went to the wild card. And I got killed. It was, you would have thought that I had defiled motherhood. I mean, it was bad. Bob Costas, you know, who was on the cover of the book along with Henry Aaron and a bunch of other people, killed me. And you can't do that, and you're ruining the game. And I would say to you today now, where would we be without the wild card?
I liked it then, and I like it now. I wasn't resistant to it right away. I thought it was a good thing.
Yeah, you know, Commissioner, you talk about the cluster that the baseball was for a little bit, and I'll leave out the explicative on the back end, but you talk about it. What made you uniquely, I guess, positioned? Because when I think about it in retrospect, who else could have done it the way that you were able to handle it? What made you positioned to take over that role? You were an owner, right?
You had, and there was a lot of criticism. I'll tell you what happened. It was really interesting. I had been very active, and Faye Vincent resigned. I was in Milwaukee because Robin Yount, who was our star, was going for his 3,000th hit, and I wasn't going to miss that. I had seen almost all his other hits, and I wouldn't. And I got a call from some owners in St. Louis where I was going the next morning. And I said, you know, Faye is gone. The executive council, which is got to take over, and you got to be the chairman, which was the commissioner. I hadn't thought about it. Kiki, I got there. I said, don't be silly. By the time I got there, they had already voted. And
so it was not by choice.
And it was great. So it was as a result of, and then the rest was kind of history, you know. So, and, you know, people often said then, well, commissioners shouldn't come from ownership ranks and so on and so forth. It turned out.
Which I agree with, by the way. I know. Philosophically. Well, how do you divorce yourself from your passion?
Well, but I'll tell you how you do it. And it took me a few years to make sure that I could. Okay. I agree with you. But there was no problem that came to me that I hadn't dealt with as the president and owner of the Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're well prepared. You know, commissioners come, have worked in league offices. Roger Goodell worked in the NFL, David Stern. And so they come from different perspectives. But I have to tell you, given the problems, and I think that ownership, which they hadn't before, trusted me. I cannot sit on today and tell you the owners were tough. For instance, take George Steinbrenner.
Mm.
And I had an interesting relationship. Close, very close. You'll get a kick out of it. We did a lot of things together. We never agreed on one thing.
And was it as simple as big market versus small market?
It was that, but we became friends.
Mm-hmm.
We became friends to a point where I had the Packers every year, and he had Tampa, so I did very well there. And then I had Wisconsin, and he had Ohio State. He did a little better on that score.
Uh-huh.
But my point to you was that they knew me, and I spent a lot of time with ownership. And whether it was big market or small market, this or that, in fact, after a while, I insisted on 30-0 votes because I wanted all of them to feel part of it. And remarkably, for many years, I got 30-0 votes, including George's. Now, his sometimes came difficult.
Reluctantly.
Very reluctantly.
And very late.
Yeah.
That is a former commish, and he's with us here, Bud Selig, for the good of the game. And I was jokingly, I was like, whoa, he's sitting around watching Kevin Costner's movie on Netflix. And he's, I mean, would you change the name? How'd you come up with the name for the book? I mean, for the love of the game, for the good of the game. You didn't steal from Costner, did
well,
you?
Well, I'll tell you how I
I'm
can.
Kidding, by the way. But
no, that's okay. I like
that movie.
I debated that a lot with a lot of people, and particularly Phil Rogers and Richard. But I used to make my speech 4 to 5 times a year when we had a league meeting, always preaching to them how we had to do what was in the best interest of the game, not their best interest, mm-hmm. not my best interest, but theirs. And it came through so many times, that's how we came to the name, and I just sort of fell into it.
I want to ask you this, and I want to preface it with I love baseball. I love baseball, and I take pride in knowing baseball. He knows this. He'll mm-hmm. back me as my partner for 7 years. It's in my heart and my soul. It's what I first learned from. It's the first thing I ever fell in love with outside of my family. Love the sport. And I'm so happy to have you in studio to ask you this to your face. The one thing that I could never recognize, or I don't know that I know an answer on. I think it's probably illogical to think, but Bowie Kuhn didn't know that there was drug issues in the game. Same with Peter Ueberroth. I do believe on some level they all had some inkling. What I want to know from you, not when it first became public, when was the first time that you said to yourself, even before you ever acted on anything, what Mitch reported, where you said, we got a problem here. We got a problem. Drugs are taken. Now, and by the way, ratings are going up. Home runs are going over the fence. People loving the sport. To be fair, if I'm you, I don't know if I jump on that and cut that off right away because we're making money. When did you first know you had a real
problem? I'll tell
you
exactly, and I detail in the book. One of the reasons I wrote this book, there was so much what I call historical myth about the whole steroid.
Hmm.
So let me, I'll try to give you an answer. I know that in the 90s, Ken Caminiti talked about it. Bob Nightingale wrote an article in 95, and I talked to the clubs about it. And I even called some of my players. Guys who I, like Robin Yount, who said to me, what's his name? There were a couple of players that did it. He said, but we didn't like those guys anyway. Nobody in our club did it. So this idea that we knew about it and didn't do something is nonsense. Now, in 98. Writer in Pittsburgh, Steve Wilstein, wrote an article, found a bottle of Andro in Mark McGuire's
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I remember that day I walked in a pharmacy where we go, and the druggist says, over there. And he, you know, he sort of has a big mouth. So I said, well, you don't know why I'm here. He said, I do. And he was right. We got, and I say this to you not to use it as an excuse.
Yeah. But, Commiss, you're saying you could just buy it off the shelf.
Yeah.
Andro, you could at that point. Yes, you could.
Right,
it was like Metarex. It wasn't that different.
Off the shelf.
Yes.
So the best we could get the Players Association, this is, and the thing that puzzles me about this that people don't seem to understand, this is a subject of collective bargaining. This is not something, Commissioner, not God. He can't just do things. I, for instance, in 2000, I banned it in the minor leagues because there I can do it unilaterally. I don't need anybody to do it. The union fought it. And they fought, and I don't say it even critically. Mm-hmm. They did it publicly. There was no question about it. And so for the next 10 years, off and on, we struggled, we fought, we made it tougher and tougher. Till today, we have the toughest testing program, not only in American sports, but I think in American business. WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, will substantiate
that. No, it's
that.
Solid. I'm not complaining.
And so, but it took a while. And so the answer to your question, I devoted my life for a long period of time because the union fought it. Remember this. We went through the cocaine era in the 80s.
80s, mm-hmm. It was bad?
Bad.
Keith Hernandez.
Bad.
Of,
you don't have to tell
Pirates.
Me.
It was bad. You know,
29 players got convicted in Pittsburgh.
I remember that.
Four went to jail, and there was still no drug testing program. There was a left-handed pitcher, Steve Howe. Remember Steve Howe?
I got a baseball from Steve Howe.
Well,
he passed away.
He passed away because he overdosed. Yeah. We've suspended him, Kiki, 7 times.
Wow.
And he came back every time.
Yeah.
And so the union fought it for whatever reason, and I'd go into it in great detail in the book. So I'm sensitive about it. I hired Senator Mitchell to do a complete study, which he did, which is, I think, the only time an American sport has ever hired somebody from the outside. But I felt so strongly that Jose Canseco had written a book, and the players were very angry at him. And in fact, that's what Robin Young told me at the time. We knew Canseco did it. We didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't care what Canseco.
Yeah. You know.
Did.
So, Commissioner, the life is full of like ups and downs, and some people want to get rid of the downs and just trumpet the good things that happen in their life. Bet. Do you embrace that this defines you in some regards? Do you embrace it? Like, it's part of your legacy. It's not going to go away, right? Do you embrace it or do you resent it?
I don't, neither. I don't embrace it and I don't resent. Look, I know what I did, Kiki. And that's a really fair question. What I said to myself, and Rob Manfred, who's now the commissioner, was our labor man, and he worked on it. We did everything we could from 98 on. I could detail every year for you. By the way, the theory that we like it because it increased attendance went down in 99 after 98, after Maguire-Sosa. It only picked up again in the last 11 or 12 years of my commissionership to record levels when we had the toughest testing. Just the opposite is true. Look, I understand. I know some people will say when I got in the Hall of Fame, well, he was the commissioner during his term, but we got rid of it.
Yeah.
We did what we had to do. And was it difficult? Yeah, because unilaterally, I'd have done in 2000 in the big leagues if I could have, but you couldn't.
You know what I always said about you, and it was never in your presence, and I always meant this, and, you know, you do talk radio for a long time, especially doing it locally in New York when A-Rod, I mean, it was just Giambi, steroids, every single day. And I said things about you. Not that I regret, because it was never personal. It was never mean. It's just how I felt. But one thing that I always said about you, and Bud Selig is with us here in studio on Tiki and Tierney, I still do. I always said he loved baseball. He always loved baseball. Just your affinity for the Brewers and Hank Aaron to your daughter and how it got passed down. And I never thought it was an easy job, but I don't know that I could say that every other commissioner in every other sport loves their sport. I always got the impression that you love baseball with everything in your soul.
I do. And there's no question people have said this about me, sometimes for good and sometimes not so good. But I have had a passion for the game since early on, just like you've had a passion for football. And that's the way it should be. I tell my students, but I used to tell people, if you don't have a passion for this, don't do it.
Yep.
And that's true in everything in life.
You're right.
Don't
do it. You have
and
to
so
love it.
You talked about do I embrace it? And that, look, one thing that I had to learn back in 92 and 3, when things were bad and they were bad everywhere, if you're going to be a commissioner and you want to get something done, whatever you do, somebody's going to be mad, and you got to get over
true.
That.
Like your politician.
Get, no,
like
even if you – look, we talked about the wild card. Mm-hmm. Now it's the most popular thing in the world. But I got killed. And
the purists didn't like it at first. They got over it, to your
they
point.
Got, of course, because it was the right thing to do. The same thing on revenue sharing. And I, you know, it depends on the market you're in. But anything that makes the game better, as Pete Rozelle understood for the NFL many years ago, and I mean that sincerely, I think one of the great things that I've in modern sports today was Pete Rozelle in 1961 convincing, now they were smaller, and of revenue sharing.
Yeah.
Kept the Packers in the league.
You're right.
But it made the league better.
Yeah.
That's what you got. And that's what I tried to do. Not popular.
You tried to get a salary cap, too.
We did.
You tried to get a salary cap.
Yes, we did in 1994.
That wasn't working.
Commissioner, you obviously...
But we found ways around
it. I hear you.
Commissioner, you obviously can't be commissioner forever. Eventually, you retire, spend time with your lovely wife, who's here with us in the studio as well.
My wife's sitting right here. Yep.
She's blowing us kisses. I know. Very friendly.
Those
are for you.
That's not for us. But there have been continued advances in the game, and I think there will continue to be. Pace of play, et cetera.
Absolutely.
As you look at where baseball is heading, are you liking what you see? There is some issues with some of these smaller markets. Tampa Bay, we talked about multiple times over the last couple of weeks.
The A's stadium
split,
issue.
Yeah, exactly. There's some
those
teams
are the
with
only
some
two
issues
that we have got to solve. And but, let me look. Things are never perfect. You're always going to have. We have less trouble than we've had. However, having said that, the A's seem to be quite optimistic they're going to get a stadium. So that one goes away.
Been hearing that for 7 years, though, but with all due respect.
We do, but they have a site. They have a
San
site.
Jose and, going here.
Well, they couldn't go
they
to
going?
They couldn't go to San Jose. Well, there's a...
Well, because the Giants held the territorial rights that the A's gave them.
They did.
They were going to go to St. Petersburg, the Giants, back in the 90s.
But the fact of the matter is, as I used to tell the clubs, and I'll tell you, when you have territorial rights in any sport, you got to protect
them. I actually agree with that.
Otherwise,
yeah. I agree.
Otherwise, you know, some clubs would like to move into New Jersey. One that like to move into Connecticut.
I agree with you on that.
You just can't do that.
We're going to break. We just got the word that we have an extra segment with the commish. We're going to run a late. Got a couple of more things to throw by you. Hall of Fame candidacy in terms of what you really truly think, who should get in. Want to probe about the book a little the book a little bit more for the good of the game. Bud Selig, the former commish.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.